Welcome to the TV podcast from thevidiots at tv.org. On today's podcast, Steve Lutz talks about video games, and Jason Snell, Lisa Schmeiser, and Philip Michaels recap the new fall season.
Hey, this is Steve Lutz for the TV podcast. You know, we don't often mention this on our little website, but there's a lot more you can do with your television set than sit on your couch and gape in its general direction. Some of us at TV also like to use our hands once in a while. That's why I'm excited to announce that Nintendo has just released their newest product, known as the Wii. That's W-I-I, Wii. Personally, I've been really looking forward to the Wii coming out, because I'm expecting to play with mine a lot. That's assuming, by the way, that I can even get my hands on one. The girl at my local Best Buy refused to hold my Wii for me. I even offered her $50 to hang on to it, but nothing doing. It turns out that at most stores, the Wii was first come, first served. So, basically, you had to stand in line on launch day. And even then, I suspect a lot of people got the shaft. Anyway, in case you were wondering, no, I don't have a Wii. In fact, I've never even seen one in person, but I do frequent a number of websites that show pictures of Wiis, so I know a lot about them. Typical for a Nintendo product, the Wii is small, plastic, and cheap-looking, so I really hope it can take a good hard beating. I'm pretty hardcore, so I'm expecting my Wii to get banged up a bit. In fact, some might be a little disappointed at the size of the Wii, but it really shouldn't come as a surprise. The Japanese are known for their small units, since they generally have smaller places available to put them. You should know, though, that it's no less powerful for its diminutive size. It's like they always say, it's not the size of the Wii, it's the games you can play with it. The Wii itself is pretty flexible. Depending on how it best fits, you can place your Wii horizontally, or stand it up vertically so that it sticks up at kind of a jaunty angle. At present, the Wii is only available in white, though I have seen pictures of a black model as well. Rumor had it that the black Wii was slightly larger than its white counterpart, but I personally think that was just a trick of the eye. Oh, and the Wii comes in a box. But I guess that's pretty obvious. What really sets the Wii apart from similar playthings is the way you control it. And how do you control your Wii, you ask? Basically, there's a long, skinny part that you grip tightly in one hand, and you twist it and shake it and wiggle it all around. There's also another thing that dangles beneath the shaft, which you cradle in your other hand and manipulate gently with your thumb. If you really want to get the most out of a Wii, you have to have very strong wrists. One other thing that's really cool about Wii is that it's wireless, so you can stand a long ways away from your television while you play with it, and avoid putting undue strain on the eye. It's perfect for kids who have annoying moms who are always telling them, "If you play with that Wii all day long, you're gonna go blind!" In fact, mom might even want to get in on the action. The Wii is aimed at providing enjoyment for the entire family, so your siblings and parents are gonna want to take a whack at it too. And don't be surprised if even grandma picks up your Wii and starts flailing away. And yet, no matter how simple and fun it is to play with, my wife will probably refuse to get anywhere near my Wii. Most likely, she'll probably just point and make fun of it. So, as usual, I'm going to be spending most of my spare time just playing with myself. Anyway, if you're looking for some good, clean fun this holiday season, you could do a lot worse than to grab your own Wii. I predict you're going to have a ball. This has been Steve Lutz for the TV podcast. Now back to you, Kimberly.
This is Jason Snell with Philip Michaels and Lisa Schmeiser for our Vidiot podcast roundtable. I thought it would be interesting, now that all the shows have premiered for this fall season, to talk a little bit about the ones that have stuck. I mean, as Vidiots, we try to watch as many of the new premieres as we can so that we can see what the horrors are that the programmers have wrought upon us. And every year, you know, there are shows that you run screaming from after one episode, and there are others that you think, this isn't bad, but it's not worth my time. And then there are others that you say, yeah, you know, I'm going to stick with this one.
And the mass of shows that premiered this year, I think, fell in that middle category that this is workmanlike in its construction.
Yes. Thank you for being competent.
I won't gouge out my eyes to avoid watching it, but I'm really not going to make an effort to put it on my TV.
Acceptable.
Adequate. Yeah. Adequacity.
Yeah, that's the...
It's the gentleman's C of the network season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Jericho was one of those. I actually, because you know we're all TiVo, we're all TiVo households. I told my wife the other day, honey, if you want to watch Jericho or The Nine, go right ahead. I'm never watching another episode. Not because I bear some ill will toward Jericho because it makes me want to sleep, because it is so slow and so implausible. And The Nine, I think its heart's in the right place, and yet I don't care. And so while I find well made and not interested, it's just that's just how I feel about those shows.
But are there any that you actually will make an effort to watch?
I'm glad you asked, Phil. It looked like Lisa was going to say something about Jericho or the Nine. Oh, that's Skeet Ulrich. He's so pretty.
No, it's Gerald McRaney.
Oh, Gerald,
and
Major Dad.
Say, I'll watch
Mayor Dad.
Are you kidding me? It's Mayor Hurst to you. Yeah. Thank you. And
I don't pay for things, so I don't know what you're talking about.
He was fantastic on Deadwood.
I'm sure he was.
I can never talk about Deadwood without battling the urge to insert several polysyllabic epithets, so I'll just stop there.
If only they had that episode where the people from Deadwood came to my house and paid for my cable. But until that happens, I'm not seeing any more episodes.
I just want to ask, at what point in his career did Gerald McRaney go from being one of the Simons to being Major Dad? He was on Simon and Simon, for heaven's sake.
Now he's Hurst.
You know, I don't remember whether he's Rick. I don't remember whether he's Rick or AJ, so that might be part of the problem.
I think
there.
That's exactly it, is that you couldn't say, hey, it's Simon, because there was the other Simon.
Right.
So, but you could say, hey, Major Dad.
Hey, it's that guy who wasn't on Riptide.
Yes, exactly. That's right.
It's a little cumbersome.
You mean Perry Smith?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or the other guy.
Corporal Dad is Perry Smith.
The shows that I've stuck with are I was going to say shockingly on NBC, but I don't think it's shocking. I think that when a network is down on its luck and sort of scraping to find its next meal, they tend to be more nurturing of shows that are weird, shows that don't have necessarily the ratings, just all these things that they're willing to take chances with that they otherwise wouldn't be. And so, you know, the three shows that have stuck with me from the fall season are 30 Rock, which I think is interesting, which I find remarkably funny, and I think got really bad reviews because they re-edited the pilot, and the critics saw the re-edited version of the pilot and said, this isn't as funny as the original. But I never saw that. All I can say is that Alec Baldwin makes me laugh. Laugh, laugh, laugh. And Tina Fey, who I don't know from Adam because I never watched her on Saturday Night Live, is really good. And it's a cute little show. It's like News Radio. It reminds me of News Radio. It's a workplace sitcom. The other two shows that have stuck with me are Friday Night Lights, which we just found out got picked up for the back nine for the full season. An example of a show that gets nurtured at a network that's sad and has no ratings.
Well, because when you're NBC, how worse can things get for you?
Yeah,
well, and if you fall below Telemundo, well, NBC owns that network too, so it's all bonus.
That's right.
Win-win.
And although, you know, they didn't stick with everything because they killed Kidnapped.
Right. Right. And that was part of the that was a show that I actually liked, and not just because I was being paid by another site to watch it. It was a very well-acted show, very well-constructed, well-paced. Part of the problem was it was on at 10 o'clock at night, and I'm a rapidly aging fellow, and about 10:15, 10:25, I'm beginning to get the nods, and I think a lot of people were not really eager to follow a serial show, a show that you really have to follow closely when you're thinking about brushing
what
your teeth
and
getting ready for bed.
Well, yeah, that's why Matlock was on at 8.
And for a while, it looked like NBC. Thank you, jerk. And for a while, it looked like NBC was going to sort of do the right thing, because they, you know...
Wait, did you just say you thought NBC was going to do the right thing?
Yeah, well, I'm hopeless and naive.
Old and naive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's a great
time. I'm confused, and I just want my stories on at a decent hour.
I have some mashed peas. Would you like some peas, too?
Yes.
All right.
You know, there's no like federal law that requires them to carry on a show to its bitter conclusion. But they did a thing where, okay, we want to cancel the show because it costs a hell of a lot of money to produce and it's not getting any sort of ratings. So let's put it on Saturday night and let's cut the episode order, or let's only show the 13 episodes, and the producers have the plan to get us out in 13. And that way, you're rewarding the people who have actually tuned in to see the show, and right. they will get some sort of resolution.
Unlike Reunion last year on Fox, right. where they had the big murder mystery and they got halfway in and said, sorry, canceled, goodbye.
And then NBC airs one episode on a Saturday night and says, ooh. No, let's break out the Law and Order reruns because this ain't flying.
So am I wrong? Am I being too cynical in saying that the reason that they decided not to run all the episodes off on a Saturday night was entirely because they realized the profits from selling a DVD set with unaired episodes on them would be more than the ad revenue they would recoup from a Saturday airing?
I think you are being cynical, and I think you are being correct. But it's a short-sighted move because why would I ever watch a serial show on NBC again?
Well, why would you watch a serial period? I didn't watch Six Degrees. I didn't watch The Nine. It took me until I got the News About Heroes pickup before I started watching that. Why would I bother investing in any series if the network's going to back off after just a few episodes?
It is true. I wonder how many people out there sort of banked shows on their TiVo and sort of said, well, let's see how it goes before I go down this path. Or I think even more likely a scenario is I'm just not going to bother, and if it becomes a hit, I'll catch the first season on DVD before season two airs. Because those, you know, in that scenario, that first season DVD invariably comes out right before the season starts up. Mm-hmm. The second season, if it survives that long. And so you know they've got a first season in the can, the ratings are decent, they're doing a second season, and then you get the DVDs.
It's worth your time.
Right.
Hey, speaking of heroes, you only mentioned two shows of the three on NBC that you're watching.
You have correctly intuited that the other show that I've stuck with is Heroes on NBC, mm-hmm. which, you know, I saw the pilot through the magic of the internets and the Google. I saw the pilot on this summer before it aired. There's a secret little webs. Now, anyway, you can get to it if you know the secrets of the BitTorrent. And it was okay. You know, it was half a pilot. They actually cut it in half, and they only distributed the first half of the pilot. It wasn't great, but it was interesting enough, and I'm enough of a comic book geek that I wanted to go. And Lisa's scoffing at me, saying, "You are not even remotely a comic book geek."
No. I was just thinking. What I was gonna say is what I found really interesting about Heroes is the pacing does remind me a lot of comic book pacing, and each episode is sort of structured like a comic book issue, where you have the resolution of one dangling plot line,
right.
and then it kicks off the next
right.
couple of storylines and forces you to keep tuning in for more.
There is a payoff that happens, which I think they've been mm-hmm. more careful with than Lost, where Lost tries to do. I know, I'm a Lost booster, but mm-hmm. I do appreciate that Heroes does seem to be very well aware that people can get frustrated and distracted if they aren't being handed some tidbit or some other mm-hmm. piece of plot advancement every week, and they do a pretty good job of it. I was actually having a conversation just the other day with my wife about how I think one of the reasons that Heroes succeeds is that although there are a lot of people on the Heroes writing staff who are comic book professionals that were brought in as the show was being developed, the guy who's running it is the guy who did Crossing Jordan, is that right?
Yeah, he did Crossing Jordan.
And doesn't know, he wouldn't know, you know, Emma Frost from a hole in the wall, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, I think you could tell the difference between those
you know,
two.
Okay.
But he has the knowledge of the TV conventions that you're going
to
need. Because,
I was trying to find somebody really obscure. He wouldn't know Cerebus the Aardvark if he came and bit him on the ass. But so this guy, Tim Kring, the thing, you know, he's got somebody like Jeff Loeb there to say, you know, oh, I've got this idea for a character who does this. Yeah, that's Magneto, genius.
Yeah.
No, you're not going to do that. But he comes
in the Marvel Universe and the Flash and the DC one.
Yeah, that's right. Either way, you don't want that guy. So the brilliance of having a guy like that at the helm of a show like Heroes is that it's all new to him, and he's got a sensibility of somebody who is a babe in the woods when it comes to the whole sort of superhero thing. He knows the big picture from, like, the big Hollywood summer movies, but he doesn't know a lot of that arcane detail that some of his writers know. And I think that translates into reaching an audience who is similarly not steeped in the traditions of comic books. And you know, when he's sitting there watching an episode or reading a script, he's representing them and saying, what is this? I don't even understand this. And so I think the end result is something that's accessible, that if it was Jeff Loeb doing it by himself, as good a writer as he might be, is not, you know, he's going to be too far into it, and he's going to be thinking about, you know, these arcane comic book things that just regular people don't want to see.
Well, there is one comic book tradition that they have kept that I'm not too pleased about, and what I find fairly interesting is the male heroes are politicians or nursing school graduates or or Japanese office drones or what have you, but the two women in the cast, one of them is an internet stripper and the other is a cheerleader, and they go and they go out of their way to make sure either is wearing as little as legally possible on network TV.
From my visits to the comic book store, that does not seem out of line with the comic book tradition.
Well, comic book tradition, yes, but what I think is happening is that comic books are actually changing a little bit, and you have more and more female superheroes that are actually permitted to wear clothes.
All right.
So,
to a certain degree.
Is that in mainstream comics, Lisa?
I will say yes. You will say no. They even have an X-Men who wears the Chador now. Soraya, the dust one, and they've got a whole bunch of the X-Men that they let stay, keep
Lisa's,
their clothes on.
See, again, Lisa has now proven that I am completely not a comic book geek at all. I think, you know, I had that reaction, and on TV.org, Nathan Alderman certainly had that reaction when he wrote his initial review, which I know that he's sort of recanting now, because as it's rolled along, I feel like there's been more depth there. I actually really liked the cheerleader character, because when we met her, she was kind of distraught and attempting to repeatedly kill herself and failing, and is, I think, a stronger character. And, of course, the revelation about our internet stripper is that she actually is sort of the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, she's basically Bruce Banner and the Incredible Hulk.
Which is interesting. It'll be interesting to see where they go.
Her character really fascinates me because her alter ego actually refers to the kid in the plural, such as "Don't mess with our son."
Right.
And that's the kind of integration that you don't see with your other, you know, famous split personalities in comics.
The Incredible Hulk would have been a vastly different show if it had featured strippers. Bruce Banner is dead, and he must make the world think he's dead until he can get tips for the in the champagne room.
That's what TV...
You've just taken us in a whole sick direction.
That's how far TV has come since the late 70s. I noted on the web the other day they're making Watchmen into a movie for the, like, 90th time they're trying, and whether they'll succeed this time or not remains to be seen. But I am struck by how many attempts to take comic books and put them in movies there continue to be, and yet so few attempts, although with Heroes being a success, we'll see more very soon, of taking them and trying to fit them into a TV format, where the things that
Which
makes comic books good, I think, is the progression of the characters. I mean, I think that's why you're attached. And Watchmen, I've said this, I think, since the late 80s, I've said this. Watchmen is made to be a 12-hour miniseries.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether that's one of these 12-hour sci-fi miniseries or whether it's something on HBO, that's
the British approach.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that I wish we'd see more of on TV in general, not just for comic books, but the idea that, you know, this is a story and it's going to take us 12, 14, 18 hours, and then it's going to be done. And then maybe we'll revisit these characters again later, but it'll be, you know, whatever, number two. It won't be the second season. And, you know, I wish they would do more of that. It does sound like Heroes has a storyline that is intended to wrap up at the end of season one, and then they'll go on to a new story.
New adventures.
Like story arcs in comics. Well, one of the things I was thinking about this, too, because you would think that TV and comics are natural fits, in that they both have a strong serialized narrative tradition. But there might... What I may not have been thinking about closely enough was the budgetary consideration, because it is very easy to make an X-Men movie when you have gazillions of dollars at your disposal, but... Do you remember watching The Flash on TV?
Yeah.
And
John Wesley Shipp and Amanda Pace.
I enjoyed The Flash.
The Flash on TV was pretty good. And Heroes, you know, there's enough with CGI today.
Yeah.
You can do, on a budget for TV, you can do enough as long as it isn't kind of outrageous. But as somebody who just watched this weekend X-Men 3, let me tell you, the lack of ability to just throw in more crappy special effects is a good thing, because these summer movies end up being all about the special effects. And what my wife said to me was, you know, I have no idea who these people are or who their powers are, because
they're throwing them in. Because hey, here's someone who flies. Hey, here's someone with the spikes. Hey, here's someone.
Yeah, it's 20 characters and they fight and things blow up and then it's over. And the thing that would make an X-Men, if you imagine the X-Men in a series, which, you know, who are we kidding? That's basically what Buffy the Vampire Slayer was anyway. But it's about the characters. And there are some fights. And, you know, in Heroes, those moments where there's powers that are being used are kind of breathtaking, because they are so limited. And when they happen, it's like, wow. When Nikki gets in that fight with her husband and she sort of slams him against a wall.
Yeah.
When the politician just zips up into the air and then lands at the diner.
And skids and lands. Yeah, that's a great moment.
You know, when Hero stops time, these are all moments where you're like, ooh, wow.
Yeah.
And you'd get tired of it if they were doing it all the time. Plus, then there'd be no time for the characters, which is why most of the comic book movies are so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anything else that stuck with you from the fall season?
Ugly Betty.
Ugly Betty. See, that's on my list of I appreciate it, and yet I find it a little bit too soapy for me. But I like it, and I think it's very heartwarming.
I love the soaps. I love the soaps. So that's part of us. Hi, microphone. I like the soapy aspect of it, and I like that they've actually taken it over the top, and now Ugly Betty's dad is an illegal immigrant, and he's killed somebody, and he's on the run from the law.
Wow, I missed an episode.
Yeah. And they've had to sell.
I have not been following along with Ugly Betty.
Is Ugly Betty selling her own blood to make ends meet?
Not yet, but she almost did in one episode.
Eerie.
I think what is also fairly unusual about this series is you have a lead character who consistently chooses to do the right thing rather than the easy thing. And she's not, but here's the thing, is she's not going and drowning her sorrows in a bar afterward like any one of a number of interchangeable cop protagonists. And she's not banging her head against a wall like, you know, somebody on the CW. She just does it because that's how she's wired. And that makes her pretty remarkable. So
it's sweet. I mean,
it's a very sweet show. It's got a very admirable lead show, and it's got a lot of funny comic snap. I mean, the dialogue.
The thing that put it over the top for me, and I mean that over the top, is Vanessa Williams.
Yeah.
Where the fashion house stuff with Betty and her boss, and the people who don't like her, and some of the wacky hijinks. I kind of like that. The scheming. I'm evil, you know I have Dalmatian coats in my closet, kind of thing from Vanessa Williams it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah.
It was like too much and too unpleasant.
I've got a completely different take on it, because as the episodes have progressed, you find out that she suffers from never getting her dad's approval. She was wrongfully passed over for a job she should have, by all rights, had. She has problems with her kid. She's rapidly getting older in an industry that doesn't prize it. She's a cartoon villain.
But she's evil, too.
Well,
that's the problem
the
I have
well,
with it.
Well, no, but the thing is she's not just a cartoon villain. You can kind of tell where she's coming from half the time. She takes it a step or eight farther than any of us would have.
Right.
But she is not from another planet, and she's not one of these characters where, like, why do you do... Are you weird? Are you crazy? She's not like that. She's somebody where you can see that she's made a series of very deliberate decisions, and she kind of feels trapped by her circumstances.
I think there's maybe one of those areas where, just like Phil is saying, 10 o'clock is too late, and I come in and say, oh, but the icky kind of bad person who's over the top, I don't like it. Maybe this is the aging of the TV people, or, you know, the aging of the vidiots. But, there is some – well, actually, you know – there is some sweetness, and you can appreciate sweetness on TV. Yeah. Steve Lutz, who is not exactly the most, you know, shiny, fuzzy guy, and he's kind of a cutting fellow, and we've heard from him several times on the TV podcast. He is a champion of Men in Trees, which to me is like the most bizarre collection.
And he also loves Ugly Betty.
I know.
I'm beginning to think that
he's
someone, someone kidnapped Steve Lutz and replaced him. And
we'll listen
Men
to his podcast.
There are a lot of people... A lot of my girlfriends have actually said they really like Men in Trees.
It's a sweet show. I mean, it is Northern Exposure with Ann Page, who is much easier on the eyes than Numbers Guy.
Yeah.
Joel Fleischman himself.
What is Numbers Guy's brother? Like the hair? Have you noticed that the kid...
David Krumholtz?
Yes, that hair. Holy cats. Why haven't they given that hair a separate billing?
It's an Einstein thing, I think they're going for. He's smart, and his hair is unruly.
Is his hair where his brains are stored? Like, he can't cut it or else he loses the ability to...
It's all about the numbers, Charlie. It's all about the numbers. Charlie.
If you cut my hair, I can't derive the square root of anything anymore. Oh, my
gosh. Is Al Pacino in Numbers?
No, but Judd Hirsch is in Numbers.
Oh,
they're the same.
Judd Hirsch imitating Al Pacino in Numbers.
Okay, Charlie.
It could be worse.
Do some math, Charlie.
Charlie, I'm blind, and I...
No. No, he's not blind. I'm your dad, and your mom is dead, and I live in a house by myself. And your brother, he doesn't understand you because he's an FBI agent from Northern Exposure. I'm doing Jack Klugman now. Let me see. Exhume the body, Sam.
That is some top-rate expository dialogue. Your talents are wasted chosen career.
I know. It's true. It's true.
You should be brought in to write, like, the first 5 minutes of every TV
episode.
That's
right. Hello. I'm John Character. And let me tell you about myself.
So, Phil, what shows have stuck with you this season?
I think I can sum that up in one word and one word alone. That word is shark.
Oh, the shark, babe.
That.
See, this is a show. This is a show that I tried out, and it hasn't stuck with me because I there's not enough time in my life. But
again,
I file it under not with the stuff that I looked at and went, oh no, this is terrible. But I looked at Shark and I went, well, this is fun. And then I
said, when Shark caught my heart.
When did the shark bite you,
yes.
Lisa? When did shark jump you?
In the pilot episode, when one of the idealistic young lawyers huffs, "Well, if I made a mistake, maybe you should fire me." And James Wan says, "Okay,
you're
see you
fired."
Later. And out she goes. There is no taking her back at the end of the episode. There is no life lesson learned on James Wood's part. She's gone. And I love that they went that way.
Did she not come back? I thought
no.
she came.
No, she's gone.
Well.
She
gone.
Now, thank you, Ken Harrelson.
Now, I'm not going to argue that the Shark is like the greatest show in the world.
It's going to win a Humanitas Award.
Or that, man, you can have your Sopranos or your Wire or any one of your quality shows, but boy, you got to hop on the Shark train. No. What I like about Shark is that unlike a lot, this whole trend towards serialization that we talked about earlier, where you sort of got to watch TV and have the flip chart of characters and read the Cliff's Notes 5 minutes before the episode begins, and you can't miss an episode, because Shark is a self-contained little procedural show. Unlike the CSI or the Criminal Minds, it doesn't go for the let's do some sort of grisly, shocking
no,
crime.
No, it's breezy. It's as light as a guy prosecuting horrible criminals could be. It's
right.
just
yeah,
this
right.
fun,
and
breezy,
just,
light.
And it's just James Woods chewing on the furniture.
That's right.
As only he can.
Yeah.
It is delightful. It's basically, why bother learning the name of the character? Because it's why bother learning the name of the character? Because it's James Woods. Hey,
yeah, it's Shark.
Yeah.
And then it's James Woods, and he did that thing in the courtroom, and then he put down his young employees again.
Remember when James Woods insulted that guy? That was great.
Yeah.
I actually think that the two acting finds, and they're not surprises, but acting finds of the season are James Woods and Alec Baldwin.
Who,
you know, Alec Baldwin, say what you will about him in his own personal sphere where he seems like he may be crazy. Maybe just a little bit nuts.
I like
but
the caveat
he
seems and may.
But he yes, he's no, he's crazy. But but he's a great David Letterman guest. He's a great Saturday Night Live host. And on 30 Rock, he's playing a part that seems to have been written for him. And he is this crazy, over-the-top network executive. And he's great. I hate to be doling out such unabashed praise because, you know, it's much better to be cynical and talk about who's terrible. But,
right.
You know, it's like money in the bank. And I think James Woods is the same way.
Well,
it's like he's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
It's 60 minutes of it's an entertainment.
Yeah.
It's 60 minutes that you can put it on and do some other things around the house and look up and
right.
the court case is proceeding. And, yes, there's TV shows that you need to watch actively and they're very enjoyable and rewarding. And sometimes you just want to show on that you don't have to draw the curtains so the neighbors can't see you watching it. Like the other show that I love is the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleader show, but we won't talk about
interesting.
That.
Interesting. You know, is
oh
that,
my gosh,
what channel is that?
That
on?
Is on the
CMT.
The wonderful CMT.
See, now, now we have really gone into the weeds here, but I was watching this summer just because I happened to scroll by and I found it, not because I sought it out. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers cheerleader audition reality show on the NFL Network, which was fascinating. And then my wife walks in and I'm like, oh, honey, this show is intended ironically, of course. And she sat down and then she was watching it too because it's just fascinating.
Really? Yeah.
It's the way they brainwash the cheerleaders, where they're just parroting back the criticism. She says, "I need to be more gracious. I'm always grateful." the actual quote from somebody. Or, well, clearly I need to smile and work on my presentation, and she's just giving me criticism because she cares. And just the vacant dead eyes as they say this, and the big smiles, and then there's the people who get all worked up because they're not kicking in sync, and it's delightful.
So is that the show that you closed the blinds for?
Yeah. Or? Oh, yeah. No.
Like,
no.
Don't admit.
No one must ever know my terrible secret.
Thank goodness
except
that we're not recording this.
thank yeah. goodness the four people who listening to this will keep it to themselves when they write their one-star reviews iTunes Music Store.
The good news is the listeners to the podcast are all just coming up with things to put in their letter about how terrible the podcast is.
Dear TV, I hate your podcast because that guy likes the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleader Show and Shark. What an idiot.
The only thing
Half star. The only thing
I regret about the Dallas Cowboys Cheerleader Show is that we didn't find it during season one, because this is the second season. And they're just going to keep coming back year after year, and it is beautiful. It is just watching the way they talk about the uniform, and, oh, you have to fit the uniform and not the other way around, and the way they talk about the physical training and the etiquette classes and the crazy choreographers. It's great.
Yeah.
Especially since they get paid like $15 a game.
It's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers cheerleader show. There were women driving from across the country with no place to stay and like sleeping in their cars.
Yeah.
For the dream of standing out there on a Sunday afternoon and swishing those pom poms.
Now all we need is the Oakland Raiderettes reality show.
Well, so apparently soon every cable channel will have an NFL franchise cheerleader show.
Oh, I hope so.
Although the Jets cheerleader show will be very uninteresting since there are no Jets cheerleaders.
It'll be following Fireman Ed around.
I want the Mr. Met reality show.
Yeah.
The Adventures of Mr. Met. Can you imagine? That'll be on the Test Pattern Network.
Episode one, Mr. Met can't get through the door. His head is too big.
Oh my! So Phil, do you ever think when you're nodding off at 10 o'clock and enjoying the shark that really Matlock is around the corner for you?
You know, when I may have mentioned this on the website before, somewhere before, but I knew it was all over for me last year when I was doing a lot of traveling and staying with my parents to cut down on hotel expenses. And they would watch the JAG every night on the USA Network, and when I got into the JAG. That's when I knew, oh, God, I'm going to die soon.
You actually began to appreciate JAG? JAG and all of his fellow characters.
Jason, we TiVo'd the series finale.
When JAG went off the air, it got a little bit dusty in the Michaels household.
Wow.
Well, it got dusty for the Michaels household.
Did they kill
the Schweizer household, however, was fine.
Did they kill anybody on the JAG?
No.
Only their careers.
No. Although they did blow that one guy's legs off.
Yes.
On the JAG.
Wow.
That was the JAG's dose of...
Wow. Did Matlock come in to save the day at the end?
Or if only.
If Kojak came, did Jimmy Rockford come by in his Trans Am?
That's another great show, The Rockford Files. Yeah. You are hitting all the highlights.
Oh, I love The Rockford Files. That's my dad's favorite show, and that was a great show. That was
funny, Rockford. Only I ain't laughing.
You can't do that show anymore. Karen Sisko is about the closest, I think, to that show that we've seen in a while.
Sure.
Although Shark's got the law part of it, but that kind of breezy detective show, Karen Sisko did that, where it was, you know, yeah, they're criminals, but, you know, it's fun, and it's breezy. And I wish
we'd see more breezy TV. I mean, this is one of the things that actually turned me off from a lot of this TV season.
But CSI's fault. It's CSI's fault in Law & Order. Law & Order and CSI have single-handedly sort of turned the standalone procedural kind of show into this, like, dark landscape of either ripped from the headlines stuff.
ER? I mean, ER more or less started it with its whole, it's not just enough for us to save people's lives. We have to have personal problems to do it.
And
right.
CBS with its parade of shows of judgy blonde women who solve crimes or prosecute them.
And they never cease.
Well, that makes me want to bring up one last point about this, which is House, which is a show that I know in the first TV podcast I mentioned, and you looked at me like I was from another planet, because I know that Schmeiser Michaels' household is not a House household. But that's a great show. And the reason it's a great show is it's essentially a standalone show with some slight character development. It's great because Hugh Laurie is great. That's the reason the show is great.
Yeah.
His character is great.
This week, House says something funny. All new House.
And yet the producers have decided that what the show really needs, even though it's doing great in the ratings and is all about House, is a foil for House who comes in and for six episodes causes trouble. And you know what? I watched the crazy doctor show for the crazy doctor who says crazy things and then makes people better. Not for the angry, fill in the blank, hospital administrator/donor, played by Jay McBride, or B, angry cop played by David Morse, and I don't know who it'll be next year. Cela Ward you could throw in there as angry ex-wife or girlfriend of house. These story arcs with these guest stars that are all about people who we just don't care about. And it mystifies me because, again, this is a show that I don't want it to be about that. I want it to just be the guy saying, hey, let's try this thing. Ooh, that almost killed him. Let's try this other thing. Hey, I'm a genius. That's what I want out of
this
show.
This week on House, a cop tries to throw the book at House, but House has a prescription for getting out of trouble. All new House.
Has John Larroquette been on House yet?
Yeah, this week he's going to be on as the guy who wakes up from the coma. That's why John Larroquette is on your brain.
Yes, because he's on every show eventually.
Yeah. All new House.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. John Larroquette's like the world's most... He's like the most peripatetic actor in Hollywood. Every series has John Larroquette on it eventually.
I love that episode of ER where Ray Liotta was on and they made him eat his own brain.
Oh!
Oh, wait a second. That was Hannibal. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm getting it all confused now.
It's all so dark.
Well, it is. It is. CSI. Well, CSI this week is about their identical twins who identically died. All new CSI.
Well, that's going to be a laugh riot compared to last week. Someone gets crucified at the local Catholic Church episode.
Oh,
yeah.
That was a hoot.
That was the only episode of Justice I saw. Another show that just got canceled was a crucifixion episode. And I thought, a little dark, a little dark. Yeah. Not quite as breezy. Victor Garber, great actor, but not quite as breezy as
the
shark.
Romans proved crucifixion is not very entertaining.
Comedy killer.
Yeah.
Yes. I want more breezy dramas.
I hear you. So get on it, producers out there. Stop with the superhero shows before you start, and instead get us more breezy dramas because we're all getting old, and we want more things on at 8 o'clock.
This is why I ended up watching Psych on USA this summer, is because it was an hour
breezy?
Long. It was breezy.
Nothing's breezier than Psych.
And the young rufflings
except Monk.
Yeah. The young people are all watching YouTube anyhow. It's us rapidly aging people you have to keep entertained.
That's right.
Well, I'm confused by the internet.
As much as I love Battlestar Galactica, the thing that I really love about Doctor Who, which precedes it, is that it doesn't take itself that seriously, and it's kind of breezy and light and fun, even, and there's something to be said for that. Before you watch the hour of the crushing genocide of the human race at their, by their robot oppressors, give me something with a little sunshine, please. Mm-hmm. Oh, please, Mr. Programmer. Mm-hmm. Well, anything you're looking forward to, or is it just back to The Wire? And is The Wire over yet, Phil?
No, it's still going.
Oh, okay.
It's still going. Although this year, because The Wire is such a complex TV show, we've been just back-ordering all the TiVo episodes.
And that way we can watch a few at a time.
And then,
take notes.
Yeah.
Put together a study guide.
And go, aha!
Do some flow charting.
Now, in episode 6, that thing they did in episode 1 makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Plus, we've been kind of slammed with a... series premieres and now sweeps.
It's nice to not have pilots queued up on my TiVo anymore because I don't need any more of those.
Well, I'm looking forward to this week's My Name is Earl.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. They're supersizing, And 30 Rock, it'll be interesting to see if they can get some people with 30 Rock on Thursday nights.
Amazing Race has become watchable again. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, thanks. There were a lot of good shows this fall. And although I haven't, to get back to our original point, although I haven't stuck with all of them, there are a lot of them out there that have earned my respect, even if they haven't earned my season pass. Because there's some good TV out there, for sure. And this is said by people who actually watch TV. So hold those letters, people who are angry podcast listeners. We are watching things.
Mm-hmm.
Really. We may not be writing about any of them for the website, but that's what this podcast is for.
Have you dropped any TV shows recently from your rotation?
The Stargate's finally got the boot, I have to say. As a big original supporter of those shows, they've gotten so sleepy and they've completely run out of ideas that they've been sent away. Once you get 6 or 7 episodes on the TiVo, then that's the end of it.
Yeah.
So I think that was the dramatic moment was when I kissed the Stargates goodbye. Used to be one of my favorite shows. I paid for cable. I paid for Showtime for Stargate, and after a while, it happens with every show. You just run out of ideas.
Well, once MacGyver leaves, what do you have left?
Yeah, the cast isn't bad, but the ideas they have none, and they're caught in their own continuity. Mm-hmm. And to get back to that comic book talk, at some point the history of your storylines gets to the point where it swallows you whole, and unless you just say we're not going to care about it, like I think CSI and Law and Order and some of those shows, it doesn't matter what happened 8 years ago. But Stargate instead allowed to, it ate its own tail, and it's not worth it anymore.
This is actually
my big fear for Prison Break is that it's going to become a victim of its own continuity.
Lisa, did you appreciate your severed hand, by the way?
Oh, my gosh. I love the severed hand.
Fox sent us a severed hand in honor of Prison Break. I don't really watch Prison Break,
but the episode that is
I got a hand.
as we are recording
airing
this
across
podcast.
The country, yeah.
Involves a severed hand?
Yes. Yep. Yes, it does. Well, actually, not that Prison Break is entirely lighthearted, but the first season I appreciated because it had sort of a what sort of crazy scheme is he hatching sort of feel to it. Now, not so much. And I do worry that it's getting bogged down by its own continuity and its own elaborate internal logic. So, you know, again with the lightness, less thinking, less scheming, less plotting, be more funny.
Let's have more fun. Well, let's have more fun. I mean, that's something that, you know, as Heroes, not a perfect show, but one thing that I will say about it is generally they take a bite out of every single week when they say, okay, we're moving it ahead. We're going to give you some stuff. Yeah. You're going to have some fun, and then you're going to come back next week. And you know, for a show to click, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, because Heroes is a fun show.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, stay tuned for more TV podcasts. We're definitely going to be doing more of those. I think we've got a critical mass of idiots who can meet on a regular basis now to talk about the issues of the day. Mm-hmm. And so I want to thank everybody out there for listening. Please, you know, feel free to send your comments to tv@tv.org or write your reviews on the iTunes store. They can be negative. They can be positive. Who are we kidding? They're going to be negative, but that's okay.
We'll make fun of them all the same.
That's right. So for the TV podcast, this is Jason Snell,
Philip Michaels,
and Lisa Schmeiser.
And we'll see you next time.